Read and hear more about important news and policy issues at ncpolicywatch.com. This is News and Views with Chris Fitzsimon.
Governor Pat McCrory now has his cabinet in place and is working on putting his first budget together, a daunting task considering his promises to cut taxes, invest in public infrastructure, and improve education. Here to talk about the challenges McCrory faces in his first year in office is Rand Coble with the North Carolina Center for Public Policy Research. Well, Rand, thank you very much for being back with us on News and Views. As always, we appreciate your time.
Well, thank you.
We haven't had a chance to talk since a lot of things have happened. And as we look forward to 2013 in public policy in North Carolina, I guess we should start really with we have a new governor, not just a new legislature. He made an inaugural address. He's made his cabinet appointments. He's beginning to make some other appointments. Let's talk a little bit about what he faces and what you make of his priorities that you've heard so far.
No surprises on his three main issues that he ran on the campaign: tax policy, energy policy, education policy. A new priority has emerged in his early comments of the state's infrastructure. I mean, that was something I heard him speak three or four times in the campaign in person, and he never mentioned that. And so that's sort of a new fourth priority, and he seems serious about it. It's kind of natural for a mayor, a former mayor, to be interested in that, but that's something new. Then, you know, he makes his cabinet appointments, and some of those are pretty interesting appointments. It's sort of people with experience, without experience, inside government, outside government, in a lot of ways, the mix. And then he faces really a series of fairly quick decisions that are sort of other people's deadlines. One of those decisions is sort of what kind of health care exchange to undertake under the National Affordable Health Care Act. And Governor Perdue gave him a lot of flexibility by choosing a hybrid federal-state exchange, but that gives Governor McCrory the flexibility to go either full state exchange, full federal exchange, or to stay with the hybrid, and also got him $74 million in a federal grant to implement that, whatever he chooses. He's also got a pretty quick decision on unemployment insurance in terms of North Carolina being impacted by owing the federal government for the amount of unemployment insurance that we've in effect borrowed from the federal government. And the sooner you act on that, the less debt you incur. And so that one will come up quick. He's also got to make a decision on whether to expand the Medicaid program, again, under the Affordable Care Act. So a lot of this is sort of coming fast and furious for people who will have been in office basically about a month before they have to make all three of those decisions.
We talk a lot about, and you do wonderful research about the makeup of the General Assembly, and I want to get to that. But it's interesting, people sometimes tend to forget when we have a new governor, especially a governor of a different party, that there's a massive infusion of new people in state government, of new department heads, of figuring all this out. How difficult is that in the face of these decisions that are looming?
I think it's a pretty significant thing. And even if it's the same party, you know, it takes a while for cabinet secretaries to learn their department. Aldona Vosh, for example, is the new Secretary of Health and Human Services. She's a doctor by training, but has been an ambassador. And so it's not like, you know, she knows that department inside or out. It's got about, 16,000 to 18,000 employees. It's a big department and spread out all over the state in terms of state psychiatric hospitals, schools for the deaf and blind, you know, mental retardation centers. I mean, it's hard to learn. And then most governors sort of appoint their secretaries, but they usually go down and appoint a few division directors, too, to head up things. And then they've got thousands of appointments to boards and commissions, whether it's the State Board of Education, the Social Services Commission, the Environmental Management Commission. You know, that's a pretty big barrier for people. The Republicans, McCrory's only the third Republican governor in the last 100 years. And so that means they aren't deep with people who have had experience running departments. On the other hand, they're not locked in to previous policies. And so there's sort of some pluses and minuses with that. It's a significant transition. Some of the smaller departments, probably not as big a hurdle. But, you know, when you're dealing with something as big as health and human services, transportation, there's a lot to learn there.
I want to go back to something you said earlier. I was also struck that McCrory has talked a lot about infrastructure. You mentioned that he was a mayor. I wonder how much of that is behind it. For example, he had a press conference to point out there was a small fire in a closet where a printer or a computer was. He's complained about the state, literally the state of the buildings and the disrepair that he finds state government in. What do you make of that?
I think it's natural for a mayor who's used to sort of being on the streets and sort of seeing what a city does. McCrory, one of the things that he is most well known for in Charlotte is a mass transit system in Charlotte. And supporting it through sort of a voter referendum that questioned it and getting it supported through that voter referendum. So I think it's natural for a mayor to sort of be out and about and actually see buildings and what repair they're in. I think it's also for a governor who's interested in economic development, roads and transportation systems, that's a natural thing. It's good training for the governorship in terms of the infrastructure issue. So it's not surprising. It's just surprising that he sort of elevated it to, you know, being one of his top priorities in his very first month.
Let's talk a little bit about, as we move to the legislature in a moment, but his relationship with legislative leaders. You've been doing this for a long time, following these things. It's always interesting how I think people make assumptions that because everybody's in the same political party, they're all of a sudden immediately on the same page. And there are personalities involved, there are political ambitions involved, there are people who are used to being in the limelight who now maybe have to give up some. How do you think all that will work as we head into this new year?
I think because this is the first time since 1898 that you've had a Republican governor, Republican majority in both chambers of the legislature, House and Senate, and Republican majority on the state Supreme Court. That, and as I mentioned before, McCrory's only the third Republican governor in the last 100 years, that they will want him to succeed, they being the legislature in this case. And so they're going to give him a lot of leeway, I think, in this first, say, year and a half. On the other hand, I think the average citizen, average reporter, whatever, underestimates how much institutional rivalry there is between executive and legislative branch and even between House and Senate. And that'll be exacerbated, I think, a little bit if, you know, sort of one of the hot rumors in Raleigh is what if the Speaker of the House, Tom Tillis, and the President Pro Tem of the Senate both run for the U.S. Senate nomination in 2014? Well, that means the normal House versus Senate rivalries then take on a political tinge as well as sort of institutional rivalries between the culture of those two bodies. So all is not sweetness and light, even if you are in the same party. But, you know, I do think that because McCrory is only the third Republican governor in 100 years, they're going to really want him to succeed. And he will be the leader for, you know, at least the first year and a half before, say, some caucus issues come up that might possibly divide them, such as tax policy, or issues where people are jockeying for position in terms of who will be the next speaker. Because Tillis has said no matter what, he's not running for another term in the House or as speaker.
Up next, what to expect from the General Assembly this year. Stay tuned.